We are live. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode 20 of the Godfathers of Podcasting. My name is Donnie DeSilva, and we are back for another week of fun and shit talk. And I am joined by my brothers, as always. First off, we have a man who's done more for the hip-hop world than the Titanic did for the cruise line industry. And we have a man who wears his heart on his sleeve and hot sauce on his shirt. My bro, Danny O, and Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell. Gentlemen, how are you?
Yes, sir. Which one is which?
Yeah, that was switched around, I feel like, right? Because we've all seen Danny O with hot sauce on his shirt.
Love me some hot sauce, bro.
Right?
But I am, bro.
I'm recognizing that Bismarck key up in behind there, right?
You're liking
now,
that right there. Oh, again, this is, bro. Oh, wait. I can't point properly. Here we go. No.
So one of the greatest things, if you go back, like there was a show that I went to with the Beastie Boys. Beastie Boys were playing, right? And I forget who it was supposed to be that opened up for him, but whoever was opening up for him had to cancel out or something like that, right?
Okay.
It was Molson Park where they did it in Ontario, in Canada there, right?
Right, right.
And all of a sudden, like last minute replacement, boom. Bismarck key.
That's insane. I remember Donnie, we were doing one of our podcasts back in the day, and Bismarck key was playing live in Toronto, and I was so excited because I had never seen him live before, and I rushed out of the studio once the show was done to go check him, and he was doing a DJ set. That's it. So I was so upset. It was a dope DJ set, but everyone in the building was like me watching Bismarck key, not rhyme. We'll just do a DJ set. That being said, the latest news that I've heard about Bismarck is that he's been hospitalized. So I want to send a big shout out to.
Yeah.
What's going on?
The story that I've heard, has not given a lot of detail. I don't know if this is COVID related. I don't know what other health ailments he may have. But the last time I saw Bismarck's name on social media a few days ago is that he'd been hospitalized. So this is obviously for Tid. Let me just move over and say that, I'm changing my backgrounds. I got my Kumo D, my Rob Bass, and DJ Easy Rock.
DJ Easy Rock.
Yep. Bismarck, and I put this up before the news came out. Much love to Run DMC. This is my favorite Run DMC album, Raising Hell. And after 18 years, they've made arrests in the murder of Jam Master Jay. And I hope he gets the justice he deserves. It's insane, but it's amazing also to hear that what I thought was a cold case or another hip hop artist murder that goes unsolved seems to be going the way of justice being served. And as far as I'm concerned, Jam Master Jay's death is, in my opinion, easily one of the all-time biggest tragedies of hip-hop. If you don't know Run DMC, you don't know hip-hop, and they're easily one of the top groups who inspired me to even fall in love with the culture. So God bless Jam Master Jay, and I hope justice is finally served after all this
time. And that's what, 17, 18 years?
18 years. In October of 2002, he was murdered in the studio. And apparently...
And yet... We still haven't arrested anybody for Breonna Taylor.
Breonna Taylor, we're still awaiting arrests on her murder. And one of the biggest problems with that is we're still awaiting for people in society to understand that it was just that, a murder. We're still having to argue the fact that this was not just a wrongful death, but this was murder. Bursting into an apartment and sleeping, a woman sleeping, being shot. Yeah.
And same with Jay, like the whole thing. He's busy doing his thing and somebody busts in.
Yeah,
you know,
we're starting to get some light shed on what actually went down. But everything I know about Jam Master Jay and what anyone knows about Jam Master Jay is he was definitely not someone who deserved a bullet. That's for sure.
No,
I got to share just a quick personal anecdote because you saw the album behind you, Dan, for Kool Moe Dee.
Yes.
And it brings back memories because I was a huge Kool Moe Dee fan back in the day.
Yeah, and that's the album right there.
That is the album. When I was a kid, I had the cassette. That cassette, and I'd be in the car with my dad, and my dad, who you both knew very well, it would have been his birthday this past Wednesday.
That's right.
And God rest his soul, it's been 6 years now. But when I was a teenager, I would be in the car with him, and I'd play that album. Wow. And it was the funniest shit ever because he would make fun of it. He hated Kool Moe Dee.
So really?
He would, Yeah, but because he heard it so much, he knew all the lyrics.
Really? Yeah, he did.
He would belt them out, making fun. Whoa, whoa, Wes. Whoa, whoa, Wes. This song is stupid.
You know
so
what?
I can't listen to Kool Moe Dee without thinking about your dad.
That's awesome, though.
But here's the question. Here's the question you have to ask. You got to go and talk to your moms now and say, hey, moms, how many times did you catch dad slipping? And popping out some Kool Moe Dee, right? Like when he was at home, all of a sudden you looked over at him and went, are you okay?
You know what's funny? Here's another quick anecdote about my dad. He used to have a pretty decent vinyl collection. I was going through it one time when I was a little bit of an older teenager, and I looked and I saw a couple of different Dolly Parton LPs. And I was like,
shouts to Dolly.
I'm like, Dad, you're a fan of Dolly Parton's music? He looks at me straight face and goes, she makes music.
Yeah.
That was, I love those.
That was your old man's. That was your old man's version of having a couple of National Geographic magazines rolling around the house. You know,
yeah,
what I'm
you
saying?
Can't get mad. It's right? An album cover. No, listening to music.
That's a thing. Like Roxy Music put out an album cover that literally had two topless girls on the cover, like with some leaves and stuff like that. Like stuff like that's happened. I can remember being a little tiny kid. You go to an album store and you start looking through the albums that had all the risque pictures on the covers and stuff like that. That's a thing.
Donnie, you're making me realize now why my dad was a Calypsonian. Because if anybody knows anything about Calypso records, you got scantily clad women on all those album covers. And I used to, he had this one, Tiny Whiny, I believe, by Byron Lee and the Dragonaires, a Jamaican Calypso group. And it's just an ass. Like, that's the album cover. Like, how do you go wrong with that record?
Man.
Right. I want to mention, folks, tonight's episode, Such That It Is, is brought to you by makegoodfood.ca. Use promo code GOP45. You'll get $45 off your first two orders. Forget about all this nonsense going out to the grocery store and trying to figure out what you're going to cook every single day. Just go to makegoodfood.ca and put your orders in, and you have your choices of lots of different recipes. It'll get delivered to your door and you're set. And that's all there is to it. GOP45 is the promo code for $45 off your first two orders. Joining us later tonight, fellas, we have a fellow Canadian comedian. Michelle Shaughnessy is going to be with us. And she's never been on the show before. I'm definitely looking forward to having her here. And we've got plenty to talk about before that happens.
Yeah.
Dan, I wanted to get your take on this story.
Okay.
Story broke a couple days ago about NBA Charlotte Hornets announcer John Falk.
Oh man.
Who was tweeting during the NBA playoffs, which are going on and have been tremendous. And he was talking about the Denver Nuggets, but when he typed Nuggets, he accidentally typed the N-word. Mm-hmm. He immediately deleted the tweet, but Twitter never sleeps.
Of course, man.
So that shit got screenshotted and retweeted. And as a result, he's been suspended, potentially being terminated by the Charlotte Hornets. Here's the question that's being raised. A, is this suspension warranted / valid? Is it possible, devil's advocate, is it possible that this was just a typo, that this was just an accident? Because one thing that was brought up to me by Toronto broadcaster Jim Richards was, if you look on your keyboard, those letters are right next to each other.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of excuse making going around, and I'm sorry, there's no way to mistype Nuggets into niggers. There's no way to do it.
Well, there is.
No, I'll tell you exactly how it's done. Unless you type that shit all the fucking time and your autocorrect brings it up while you're typing and says, okay, is this the word you're looking for? He pressed it. Not. We've all done it. I send a text every single day with an incorrect word in there because autocorrect came and fucked me. And I'm telling you right now, there's no way that autocorrect is just bringing up niggers without this guy having already typed it out God knows how many times. His mistake was simply that he pressed send on a tweet, not that he typed out that word. He didn't mean to do it in the tweet, but he's typed out that word before.
How many times have you typed it in a message to your boys?
Well, you know what the funny thing is?
Actually typed it, and then all of a sudden it becomes part of the system, like you say, and it automatically pops up, right?
That's exactly my point. Along with other...
you need to spell check your own shit before you send it out on social media, you stupid motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what the bottom line on this is, like, right? Like, he's obviously using it in his texts back and forth with his boys enough that it becomes part of him. Otherwise, 100%. Just to that is that he actually went N-I-G. You know what I mean? Like, he actually spelled it out on purpose. And he's never
going to... There's
one of two. That's it. Yeah.
Well, there's no other way, bro. There's no way he wrote it intentionally. That we can all agree.
Not in the tweet. He didn't mean that intentionally, but he's written that word on his phone before.
Enough.
For sure.
That's... I have to agree with that.
I'm looking at a keyboard right now.
Technology.
I get that Nuggets is close to the N-word. And the funny thing is,
the U is next to the I.
Yeah.
And what's the other one that, and the R is next to the T.
And you believe that that is more likely a case than the fact that his autocorrect pulled up. He admitted that he sent that tweet out so quick, trying to be timely, like everybody else on social media, that he didn't proofread it.
Yeah.
We've all done that. We've all done it. And words pop up that we didn't. Just today, I wrote something like get in the studio, and it said eat the studio or something like that. It said eat instead of get. Sometimes words are incorrectly spelled that are real words. Eat and get are two words that are real. And then you have words that aren't really words, and I use them all the time. We say wicked us, and we use different slang terms that are saved in my autocorrect. It comes up all the time. And there's no way that this guy accidentally wrote the N-word.
For the record, I fully agree with you, but but I will say this. I've had it happen before where autocorrect suggests some shit and puts some shit in that I've never typed.
Really?
That has... yes.
But real words though. Hold
on. The N-word would not be in the lexicon of your phone.
That is my point. That's a great point that you brought up, because we create our own lexicon in our phones. Of course, your autocorrect is going to bring up real words that are accidents, like the eat and get example that I just made. The N-word is one that's not going to be in there unless you've typed it enough times for it to come up. Because you guys know that usually a word, for lack of a better term, we'll call in a fake word that's not in there, will come up in quotations, and you click on it to say, yes, that's the word I'm looking for. So it comes up again the next time you start spelling something. And in his case, with the letter N, that pops up. Case closed.
So basically, we all agree with the suspension, and we're expecting this guy to get his ass fired.
Hey, man, I agree with it just as much as Tom Idiot, whatever his name is, for the Cincinnati Reds, who said the homophobic slur F word on air. I want to make a quick point here.
Yeah, I missed that. How did that happen?
Okay, I'll tell you, because I saw the clip. He's basically on a commercial break. After the commercial break, there's a shot of the field. And he doesn't realize that his mic is hot or that the commercial break is over. And the comment he made was one of the F word capitals of the world. In other words, he was talking about one city. We don't know what city it was, but whatever city he was referring to, he said it's one of the F word capitals of the world. Now,
man said this on air.
He said this on air without knowing it was on air. Two seconds later, he realizes he's on air, and he goes, "Oh, we're back." Whatever. He's saying what he's supposed to be saying. So he's two seconds too early. Now, my point is this: a few minutes ago, when I was talking to Tid, I actually used the N-word. Now, as a person from the Black community, do we use this word from time to time? Yes. Is it in our music? Yes. But even I, and I want to make this point because I used it on this episode, even I have become more conscious of not using it in general and in my music. My new record has it only appearing in 3 out of 10 songs. This is not to make some sort of new ratio that's appropriate or acceptable. I'm just saying I'm more conscious now of my own use of the term, in addition to using it in real life. The same F word, that's the homophobic slur that none of us should be using, is a word that we've all used at some point in our lives when we were more ignorant, when we were less understanding of the ways that things should be and the way that we are supposed to respect everyone. In a current day, 2020, in the midst of everything that's going on, when you are tweeting or using your phone in whatever way you're using it, because that's how this guy got caught, or you're on air or off air, these words should not be so readily available to come out of your mouth. And these two dudes, both of them, should be fired and never get their jobs back again because they are part of the problem that exists, whether it's on air or off air. They use these words, and more importantly than the words they use, it's the way they feel about the people they're talking about. That's real. You know what I hate is every single one of them does an apology and says that that's not me. It is you. That's exactly who you are. And we caught you.
So here's the more important question that I got to ask you, because you said it's on three songs. You've used it on three songs out of the 10.
Correct.
You've even made a conscious decision in your day to day to not use that word.
Right.
The fuck did you replace it with?
Well, you're talking about in my day to day speech.
Yeah.
It's even in your writing of rhymes,
because it's used in the rhymes for a certain reason.
Yeah, and I will say this: it's funny because you asked the question, and I'm not immediately conscious of what I've replaced it with. However, when I think about it from the songwriter's perspective, in many cases, I will perform live, and I'll do events that, if there's children involved, or it's an outdoor event, that kind of stuff. Sure. It's been a while, of course, but I'm talking about when I was. Usually, that word will get changed for brother, sucker, anything that's two syllables. And this is the point of writing a song, because you make a good point too. When I'm writing lyrics, you are considering your patterns, the words that rhyme with it. There are certain words that obviously rhyme with it that make it easy. You know what I'm saying? Between, you know, bigger and trigger. And there's a lot of lazy rappers out there who will just use the word and rhyme it with the exact same word over and over again.
That's why I asked that.
So I think you have to be it's intelligent and creative and come up with a way to work around the rhyme pattern, but also come up with ways to express yourself that isn't necessarily something that requires that word. I will also argue, though, as a songwriter, I will say this, or as an artist in general, as Donnie mentioned, we have a comedian coming on our show today. I don't know a black comedian. That's not true. Most black comedians are using the word. And they'll put it in their stand-up. I have heard the word used in their stand-up for a purpose, to your point, and understand the purpose. And then there's other times where it's like they're just throwing it out there. And depending on how it's used, I wouldn't go so far as saying that I get offended, but I'm like, it starts to become jarring. And the word is more jarring to me now. So I'm actually more conscious of it, as I said, and I'll get back to you on that. I don't know that I'm replacing it per se or just saying something else that's not requiring that word. And these particular individuals are not in that place yet. They're still using these words regularly, and it's clear.
Even for myself, though, I found that like when in wrestling, right? Yeah. It's always one of the things that you're told when you go out there and you're given the microphone and you're supposed to cut a promo and stuff like that. Don't say the F word.
Sure.
Don't drop the ball. And now I've also gone out there and dropped it where it was every single word of the promo.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
So how did you?
For a purpose.
Okay. Yeah.
But I've always been a very firm believer that if you can't go out there and cut a promo without using it, you can't cut a promo.
Right.
Because it comes, it's obviously a very visceral word, the F word, right? And so when you say it, you can say it with such emotion that it brings a certain something out.
And
same thing in music with using the N word or whatever, right? It's a very visceral word that when you say it, it brings something out. So you have to find a way kind of around it every single time. And I think that's what makes it, you know what I mean? Interesting to me. And that's why I asked the question, because I knew for myself, it's very easy because I use the word fuck in my day to day a lot. Right. So you have to find yourself in your artistic life pulling it away. And that's why I ask that, like, what did you find your go-tos were? Right.
I will make this argument, though. And I've had this argument with my brother. I should call him cousin Promise, who I'm in a group with called Perfect Strangers. And Promise does not swear in any song ever. So when we did the Perfect Strangers album, that was the one rule I was to follow. Keep your verses clean. And I was happy to do so because it actually helped me grow creatively. And I had an entire clean album that I didn't have to worry about when submitting to radio. However, my debate, I will say, with Promise is that language can, and in my opinion, should be used in specific ways to communicate a message as effectively as possible. To me, the F word, shit, these words that we use on a day-to-day aren't particularly offensive unless you specifically use them in a certain way. However, the homophobic F word and the N word are offensive words, period, because they basically they put specific groups of people on the defense of a very horrific word. And so there is a difference between a word that is actually, you know, creating a horrifying image or depiction of people and a cuss word. And, yeah. And the point that needs to be made is it's the year 2020. We are in the midst, as Donnie has said on this very podcast, arguably the biggest civil rights movement ever, certainly in our lifetimes, for reasons that are more than obvious. So if you are still right this very moment in time, in a place where the homophobic F word and the N word come easy to you to say, you have a problem and you are the problem. There's a big difference between that and everyday cussing. No question. Oh.
Speaking of problems, I think Alan Strickland has a problem. If you don't know the name Alan Strickland, that is the filthy ass cop from San Francisco who decided to lay charges against Raptors president Masai Ujiri last June when he claimed that Masai Ujiri shoved him unprovoked and caused a serious concussion at the end of game 6 of the NBA finals. The story goes, in case you've been living under a rock and haven't heard it, Masai Ujiri left his courtside area when the Raptors sealed the win and were celebrating on the court and was making his way down to the floor to celebrate with the team he built. He made it very clear that he was wearing floor credentials on a lanyard around his neck. He walked down and police officer told him, get out of here, get lost. And Masai Ujiri's story was the guy put his hands on him, shoved him. And Masai said, when he shoved me, I shoved him back. And the guy was But I'm just saying what Masai initially reported.
Right.
Last June. And there was this, you know, frou-ha-ha. And then finally someone intervened and said, hey, that's the president of the Raptors.
Yeah.
And let him in. And finally he made his way down to the floor and got to celebrate with his team. This police officer, Alan Strickland, claimed Masai gave him a serious concussion.
Oh my God.
He says he didn't know who he was. He thought it was some thug trying to get on the floor. And video footage has been released this week from both the arena camera as well as the body camera of the police officer. My first thought is, why does it take 14 months to get arena footage?
Agreed.
That's some dumb shit.
Agreed.
Breonna Taylor.
Secondly, everything Masai Ujiri said was 100% true, verified by two different angles.
He underplayed.
One of them being the body cam that the asshole himself was wearing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see clearly a hard two-handed shove that catches Masai off guard in the midst of holding that lanyard, pulling it out to show him. He was pushed. Masai was completely taken aback, literally, then was pushed a second time. And it's insane to me that this not only happened to Masai Ujiri, who, by the way, was in the building for what? The third time, the fourth time? By game 6, who had home court? Was it us or the Warriors?
Toronto had home court.
Okay. So by home court, that means we played 3 games minimum.
Our third game in Oracle.
You're telling me after 3 games in the Oracle, you are working security as a police officer in the Oracle. You have no idea who the Raptors president is. You want to use the word thug, by the way.
Hold on a sec. That doesn't mean. Come on, man. Well, wait a second. It doesn't mean the cop was assigned to all 3 games.
Fair. Okay. Let's say that. Okay. But let's go with the thug thing, which, by the way, is the new N-word. Since they can't use that, it's thug now. He's wearing a suit. He's clearly not being aggressive. I can't see a reason. Even if you want, I'm gonna be the devil's advocate right now. He assumed someone was trying to enter the court. This wasn't a streaker. It wasn't a guy running onto the court. Some guy being loud and crazy or whatever that you might expect after a championship has been won, especially if you're a fan of the team. He was a guy walking to the court in a suit, calmly, and in the midst of pulling out his credentials, shoved twice. And on top of that, you're suing him? Bro. And Masai said this in a statement today, and I'm just going to paraphrase it in my own way. If you still don't understand why we're saying Black Lives Matter, you don't have to have dreadlocks. You don't have to have a weapon on you. You don't have to dress like a hip-hop artist. As long as you're Black, you are going to encounter fuckery like this at some point.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing that I think, in my opinion, really doesn't mean fuck all. But there's two things to this. Number one, this guy knew exactly who that guy was.
Okay.
This cop knew exactly who he was dealing with. This cop decided that he was going to be able to, there's a crowd of people. Maybe I can instigate something here.
And get a payday.
Because clearly his motive out of this was to get a payday.
Right.
Because, and this brings me to my second point of this. There should never have been even the time to file a lawsuit. If you've ever been arrested, been taken down and charged and thrown into a cell, even overnight, paperwork starts immediately on what you've done. So if there's an incident like this, body cam footage is available immediately. So the fact that they had this footage, they saw this footage, they sat on this footage, and then allowed a lawsuit to even be built, tells you that they had some kind of, like, they needed to have the press off of this as well.
Right.
This cop, his cop's union and everything like that. Don't give me this few bad apples bullshit. This is a fucking calculated attack on people who have money. Not if it's a Black thing, not if it's a white thing. It's a money and a fucking not having money thing. And this guy took it as an opportunity to get a payday out of it. And the fact that they knew that they had this footage and did nothing about it makes them just as fucking guilty of it as the next person.
So this idiot, Officer Alan Strickland, there is a group of Toronto Raptor fans who on change.org have started a petition to have him fired.
Great.
So
imagine
right
we
now
even have to have this petition
right now. There are a couple thousand signatures. They're trying to get up to 5,000. We are going to link this on the Godfathers of Podcasting.com.
Great.
And we are going to try and drive this up and get those 5,000 signatures that they are looking for. I'm signing it right this damn minute.
Yeah.
And you know what? So I'll sign it on behalf of you guys too.
I gotta ask this next question though, right? Because the owner, the gentleman in question here, who was assaulted, let's call it what it was, is in his right mind now by virtue of the law to now sue not just this cop, but the department that assigned him to there.
I was wondering the same thing.
Is he going to take that road? I got $5 says that he doesn't. I got $5 says it does not. I got $5 that says that because of the type of human being that he is, he's going to take the other road and just use this as and hopefully let people know as a teaching moment that this is the exact reason that things need to change. It's one more link in that chain of bullshit and fuckery, as you call it, Dan.
Yeah.
That needs to absolutely change.
I wonder, bro, do you
think go ahead.
I was going to ask you, do you think that this type of forgiveness, if you will help to lead to this change? No different than the incident in New York in Central Park when the guy, when the woman was calling the cops on him. And then when they were going to further the situation by, I think, pressing charges, he was like, no, I don't want anything to do with it. And a lot of people were like, how do you expect justice when you yourself don't want it? Do we fight fire with fire, so to speak? Do we get revenge? Is that what you see it as? Because there's a lot of people who are like, we just want equality, not revenge. And sometimes I wonder if teaching these motherfuckers the lesson they deserve isn't part of what needs to be done to bring about change. So I feel like forgive and forget works.
I do feel like that there does need to be a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. Okay. And I think that needs to be dictated
by the
situation. I think that this and giving the person, the people involved, I think that this giving the gentleman from the Raptors status of who he is,
yeah.
He has the opportunity to take that approach that everybody is bitching about, that why isn't everybody taking this peace, love, and harmony, Martin Luther King approach?
Right.
You know what I mean? Okay, so cool. You've got gentlemen that are taking that approach. The gentleman in New York who decided to take that approach. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let it, like, take that approach. Why isn't that right side trumpeting those kind of things, because that's exactly what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to jump in on this, because while we're talking, a listener of the show sent me right now the 26 page counterclaim, which has been filed by Masai Ujiri.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
While you guys are talking, I'm skimming through this, and this is amazing. There are photos here. So it talks about one of Alan Strickland's claims are as a result of injuries that were caused by Masai Ujiri, he was unable to return to work and was only able to do desk duty or something to that effect. They had private investigators that took photos of Alan Strickland in his garage using a power saw and using other heavy duty equipment.
Yeah.
This is amazing. And then he's got counterclaims here. Masai Ujiri does. The plaintiffs are listed as Masai Ujiri, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, the Toronto Raptors, like the whole organization is behind this.
Right. Good.
Fourth Amendment, excessive use of force against Masai Ujiri. Second counterclaim is assault.
Good. Which it was,
and talks about how Alan Strickland acted intending to use harmful or offensive contact. Third counterclaim of battery. Masai Ujiri says Alan Strickland touched Masai Ujiri with the intent to harm or offend. Masai Ujiri did not consent to being touched. Masai Ujiri was offended by Alan Strickland's conduct. A reasonable person in Masai Ujiri's situation would have also been offended by the touch.
Sure.
Masai Ujiri seeks nominal damages against Alan Strickland. Doesn't say that here. Fourth counterclaim, intentional inflection of emotional distress.
Mm-hmm. So this could very well be just one of these countersuits to get that suit. Out of the, you know, like, you sue me, I sue you. We throw the whole thing out. You know what I mean?
But otherwise, you know what, kid?
Otherwise, maybe fuck me, right? Maybe I don't know anything about what I just said for the last fucking 6 minutes and I owe somebody $5, but maybe y'all took my bet. So suck it.
I was going to say, though, this speaks to a point that you made, in that maybe you look at this on a case by case basis, because to your point, you felt that there was intent on the cop's behalf to get some money out of this situation by knowing exactly who he was assaulting, and then coming up with this ridiculous ass lawsuit, making all these claims about his personal injury and emotional state or whatever. This video coming out and showing how full of shit he was, I think this is one of those situations that you look at and go, this one in particular, this guy needs to get got.
Filing this countersuit to make sure that
I believe so, and I'm glad that he's doing it.
Okay. I like, gentlemen, to see all this place.
We could talk about this story all night long, but we're not going to. Because joining us right now, we have our featured guest of the evening. So let's do an introduction the way we do around here. She may or may not be on Adderall right now. She's a rising star on the Canadian comedy scene, having appeared at great events like the Sudbury Comedy Fest, Moncton Comedy Fest, Global Vancouver Comedy Festival, and both of the CBC's big events, the Winnipeg Comedy and Halifax Comedy Fest. In addition to the CBC, she's been all over your television on the Comedy Network, W, Byte TV, iChannel, MTV. She's also been making Making You Laugh as part of SiriusXM Radio's regular satellite rotation, and she's even had a credit on Canada's Drag Race. She's also a screenwriter that recently tried to write a dramatic script that turned into a comedy by Page Five. Amazingly, she knows all the lyrics to WAP, and she may currently be involved in a fight with her husband because she refuses to take pictures of herself squishing fruit with her feet. I say, if Degrassi Snake Simpson wants you to squish shit with your feet, you fucking do it. Her new comedy album, Botoxic, was released last month, and it's a banger. Please welcome to the stage a woman who admits to having a touch of the crazy, Michelle Shaughnessy.
She bounced.
Excited to have her on the show. Hey, Michelle.
Hi.
She still has no. Oh, there we go.
There we go. I'm here. But okay, I got to clear something up first. You got that wrong. I wanted him to take pictures of me squishing fruit with my feet so I could sell them and make money.
Okay.
Not the other way around.
All right.
How big is the market for feet fruit squishing, Michelle?
What are you new?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I just know it's a thing.
Has the underwear market dried up? No pun intended.
That just seems like more work. You gotta
just put them on, you put them on, you take them off, you throw them in an envelope.
Yeah, but then you gotta go to the post office, you gotta, you know, like, it's just too much work. And that, like,
she's trying to stay out of shipping and receiving,
right? And I feel like fruit, like buying fruit, is cheaper than buying underwear.
I have a question on behalf of all those who don't like to waste food. Do you eat the fruit after it's crushed by the foot?
That's a whole nother video.
If somebody wants to pay me to eat it, sure. No, I haven't given this much thought to it.
Wait,
all right.
I just know that, like, I'm not working right now. I got a lot of free time. I'm a vegan, so my house is filled with fruit and vegetables, you know?
Gotcha.
Might as well, like, put, you know, my feet to use. But my husband is so against it, won't take the photos, and thinks it's disgusting. So
I think this really comes down to the state of your feet, how your feet look.
I mean, I keep them nice and pedicured.
You got cute feet? Okay.
I think so. But you know what? It doesn't matter the state of your feet, because in my research on this, there's pages that are dedicated to people with like giant bunions and corn. Like there's a fetish for everything.
Okay. That is true. Except for Dan. There's no fetish for Dan.
So other than the fact that this
not
is
a bunion
like,
fetish, that's for sure.
Other than the fact that this is like pretty much kicked off, like when we start the show, just the three of us, and we're talking about like bodies and bodily functions and all of this kind of stuff and everything like that. Like, I got, because you just mentioned, how long did you do research on this before you decided that this was going to be something you wanted to do?
Well, okay, I Googled it to see if people actually pay money for this. And there's like YouTube videos, because okay, everyone knows OnlyFans. That's like a thing now.
Right,
like,
right,
I keep getting notifications of girls being like, sign up for OnlyFans, follow me on OnlyFans. And I don't want to do that. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If people want to do it, men or women or whoever. But I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want my face out there. I don't want to be naked for people. Like, that's too far for me. But I'm like, there's also ones that are just for feet. Like, I don't see anything wrong with that. Like, it's just feet.
I'd like everyone to subscribe to my OnlyFans, which is launching later tonight.
Feet are all over it, I ain't subscribed.
It's just my Donnie's
is, it's actually called my OnlyFan.
And he's the only subscriber.
That's a beautiful that's a beautiful segue, Tid, because I wanted to ask Michelle a question. So this past weekend, my bro Danny O and I here, we had we went out to Center Island here in Toronto, and we took our kids with us and decided to have a beach day. And we took the water taxi across to the island, and our water taxi driver was staring lovingly at Dan. And I was like, man, I think he's got a bit of a crush on you. And I didn't know what was going on. And as we're departing the watercraft, he goes, hey man, you look like that hip hop guy, Danny O. And I'm screwing with the guy. And I go, yeah, he gets that a lot. And he's like, no, seriously, are you Danny O? And he's like, yeah, man. Yo, I'm a huge fan. He's freaking out. He's losing his mind. So I'm sure it made Dan's day.
I finally met him.
I met my only fan.
Yeah, he met
there
his
you go.
Fan. Now, that's a long story. I want to know, how often does that happen to you when you're walking around with your husband, Degrassi star Snake Simpson?
Probably not as often as he'd like. No, it happens. Like, it seems to come and go in waves. it's weird where it'll happen like every day for like a week and then not at all for a week. Like it does happen though. Or like we've been walking down the street and someone will yell something out of a car, you know, like it's random.
Do you dig it?
Or does it annoy you? Be honest.
Certain types of fans annoy me, but for the most part, people are generally respectful. It's the ones who don't know when the conversation's over.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That's when it gets to be a lot where you kind of have to be like, oh, well, we're going now. But and then you feel mean.
Yeah. Do you have an incident that sticks out in your mind as the most like awkward, weird? Did you have a situation like that? I remember telling you, Donna, there was a situation where there was this sweaty guy at a movie theater. He would not end the conversation. I know exactly what you're talking about. Have you had that?
I haven't personally. I know my husband definitely has. Like, okay. I've heard stuff. Like, he did, like, a couple years ago, Pat, who played Joey Jeremiah on the show, put together, like, original Degrassi reunion at Comic-Cons, like, around Canada. So there's definitely, I think, more of that that kind of happens there. You know, yeah. I mean.
But you expect it there, though.
I don't want to diss any of the Comic-Con people, no. But they're kind of a different breed of. Human, you know, 100%. In terms of like they're really big fans, they're super
passionate,
super yes, passionate. They're passionate, which is great. Yeah, they don't always know when to like keep it moving.
Yeah,
no so science. Do you have so it's happened a couple of times, obviously, mm-hmm. right? Do you have a go-to like, oh, this is like my line that I gotta say to try to get me out of this conversation? You know what I mean? Like, I gotta wash my hair over here now. Like, do you have something that you're like, oh man, I just want to get out of this? And your go-to?
No, like for the most part, I'm pretty kind about it because I don't want to be rude to people, and I kind of like he can do that on his own. You know what I mean? Like,
he's a big boy.
Yeah, so he can kind of handle it himself, but I don't mind. If they're really nice, I'll be so nice. I'll be like, thank you. Like, you want me to take a picture? I'll do that. But if they just come right up, kind of put their back to me or ask me right to take a picture, then I'll just shut it down. I'll be like, oh, we're in the middle of playing or we're, you know. But as long as they're kind and really nice, like, I don't care too much.
It's all in the attitude.
Like, there's worse things that can happen.
For sure.
So, yeah. Michelle, your new album that just came out last month, I believe, Botoxic, released on the comedy label of our good friend, Allison Dore.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Allison, a former guest on this show. I listened to Botoxic this week, and a lot of stuff stands out in my mind. Like, there's a lot of good stuff here. And I want to take one of your bits. And I don't think, Dan, you haven't listened to it yet.
I didn't get a chance to yet, no.
Perfect. So I'm going to throw something at Dan because I want to challenge one of Michelle's theories in her album. So, Dan, if you had to name the top five things you look for in a woman.
Oh, boy.
What would they be? And be honest, please.
So this is an honest question. No joking around.
No joking around. What if top five things you look for in a woman?
All right. Intelligence. I like smart women. I like funny. I like women with a sense of humor because I'm kind of a clown and I say a lot of dumb shit. And if you don't like my style, we're probably not going to get along.
Okay, but you want women that'll laugh at you because that's a totally different thing.
But I like if she's funny, you know, like I want to be able
funnier
to...
than you.
That's okay.
Okay.
I don't have to worry about that.
What are we looking for?
So hold on. I'll stop you right there.
Stopping me, okay?
Michelle has a great bit where she talks about
the
first thing every woman says they're looking for a man is they want him to be funny.
So and you do get that a lot. Men say that.
No, women say that.
No, women say that about men.
That they want men to be funny. Okay.
That's the number one thing.
Yeah.
And men always say they want a woman to be intelligent, but they're lying.
Okay. So that's why you cracked up so hard at my first.
No. There's no way that like, that is number
no,
one.
Here's the reality. No, here's the reality. No, it's not. No, you want a woman who's good in bed.
That's number
one. I was getting to that.
That's number one. That's number one.
Because you were being modest.
Exactly.
No, but I am.
Yeah.
If she was good in bed, she could be a vegetable and you'd be happy.
But here's the thing. I mean, and I don't want to take away from the bit. I'm very curious to hear where Michelle goes with it. Because if you really are being honest, you do want that in your woman. You want any woman to be good in bed. You'll select any woman who's good in bed. If your woman, you want your woman to have a break. Do you not?
I do agree, but I don't think that's the number one thing. Like, I don't think if like the hottest woman in the world walked up to you, that you would be thinking like, okay, she's smart enough for me to go out with.
Oh no, I'd go out with her. I wouldn't necessarily.
Here's the thing.
Are we talking about, like, am I going to stay with her?
Yeah.
Are we getting married? Then yeah. Intelligence is up.
But
there,
at no time, at no time. Here's the thing. Like, we all know.
We've all been with dumbass. Come on, man.
We all know how it works. We all know how it works with the dating. You know, you go out to a bar and you're standing at the end of the bar and you're looking over at the end of the bar and you see this girl and you're thinking to yourself, she looks intelligent. I'd like to have a conversation with her.
No, and the same thing. But okay, but you meet that. You meet that chick at the bar.
It's like, he's really smart. What's
listen,
that?
Though, but you meet that chick at the bar because she's a hottas. You don't know about her intelligence. And you're like, yo, this girl's wicked.
Uh-huh.
You start talking to her. Maybe you do bring her over and spend the night. You get everything you wanted from her. And then you realize, yo, she's texting me EDOT business every single day. I talked to a girl once who I called Whack Texter. And I called her Whack Texter because every day I'd get some whack text and I'd look at my phone and be like, I don't even know how to respond to this. She'd send me a message about, okay. She'd send me a message about like some guy. Now, it's not like I've ever met this guy. You know, when you get messages about, like, hey, Greg told me today. Don't know who Greg
is.
I
hate
never
those
heard
people.
Of Greg. And she's telling me about Greg. And it's like, I don't know what to say. So it drove me nuts. And she was not booked dumb, right? She was like, good job, okay. Good grades in school, you know what I mean? But like, just emotionally intelligent, like understanding how to communicate. Oh, I couldn't take it. And don't get me wrong, we had fun, but I couldn't deal with the EDOT business guy.
I'm going to see. I want to say
well,
this.
Well, maybe she ended up with Greg anyway. Maybe it
was yeah.
They were a love connection. Michelle, I'm going to say this to your comment about men not wanting funny women. My thing is, okay. I like funny women, but I don't like, and this goes for not just women. This also goes for my buddies, with the exception of Chris up there in the corner. If the person is always on, always, always on, I'm done.
I agree.
Tid is always on.
Why does Tid get the exception to the
because
rule?
I've known him for 3 decades and he has no off switch and I've just learned to love him.
It's crazy.
Like, people say that to me too when I get to know me. They're like, oh, you're a comic? Like, you don't seem like a comic. I'm like, thank God. Like, I don't ever want to be that person that's like always trying to be the center or always trying to be on it. And mostly the comics I know who are like that aren't that good on stage. It's weird. Yeah, it's weird.
So this goes back. Like, were you this person in school? Like, you know what I mean? Were you the funny chick in school as well? Like, at what point who was it that came to you and said, you know what? You should do comedy. You should do stand up.
Well, I was like, I was made fun of a lot. I was really fat when I was in school. So I was like made fun of a lot. So I think I made my friends laugh and stuff, but it's not like I was sitting in class cracking jokes, like the whole classroom, you know, for the most part, I kind of like kept to myself and had like one or two people that I would hang out with. And we'd like, you know, I would be funny out of that kind of friend group. Then I don't know. Like, I just tried it.
I don't want to hit you with one of these stereotypical female comic questions, but you just triggered something for me. Cause a lot of female comics talk about how they were fat in high school.
Hmm.
I wonder if that's if we're going to psychology you here.
Well, it's a comic thing, not just a female comic thing. It's a comic thing, not just a female comic thing. Like, a lot of comics, men or women, talk about how they were picked on. And that was kind of their defense mechanism, right?
Because comedy comes from pain.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't think it's really a gendered thing. Like, I think men, too, for sure. I just think women, when you're heavy, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know what it's like to be a heavy guy, but I think women are more apt to get made fun of for that specifically. Hmm. Whereas if you're a guy and you're really funny and you're big, you're still popular. You can still be the popular person, you know? But when you're in high school and you're a girl who's like severely overweight, it doesn't matter how funny you are, you're still not going to be in the popular group. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Michelle, earlier in our podcast, we were talking about the words we use sometimes in our real lives and then sometimes in our art. And especially at this current state of the world, those words have become passe. They're overly offensive. They shouldn't be used. Do you find that do you have any difficulty at all in creating material that you think could be offensive, that you have to change because of the way that people are sensitive about certain words or phrases?
Well,
even the word fat that you just
used,
I can imagine.
Say. Is that why? Right. That's what I was going to say. Like, I don't care about it because I was. Like, I'm not going to look at somebody else and be like, you're fat, you know?
Right.
Like, but I think if I'm talking about myself, I'm going to use the word. And if it offends people, nine times out of 10, it's not going to be somebody who has a weight problem or whoever had a weight problem.
Right.
Like, it's a word, you know, right. It's not like a slur. So I would never use a slur on stage. Like, I'm not really that type of comic, and I'm not really like that in real life. But right. I think when I'm, for me, it's like, if I'm describing the way how I used to look, I would just say fat. Like, I think any other word to me kind of sounds almost worse. You know what I mean? Like, because it feels like you're kind of skirting around the issue. Now, I'm not going to tell somebody that they don't have a right to be offended by it. And if they said, oh, they offend me, I'm not going to say it around them unless it's on stage. But that's probably the only thing in my act that I thought about, like when I recorded this second album, that I thought about and was like, oh, I wonder if people have a problem with that word. But I did it anyway. Like, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny.
That brings me to a point. That brings me to a point, and this is something that I've always said, and I want to ask, like, have you ever had to apologize for any of your stuff? Because I'm a very firm believer that comedy and comedians should never, ever have to apologize for anything that they're saying in their bits. You know what I mean? Because
I've never had to apologize.
Have you? No.
I've dropped stuff. Like, I've kind of evolved and dropped material because it wasn't true to me anymore. Like, I used to kind of like have some bits that came off as like kind of slut shaming other women. And for me personally, I just kind of like evolved out of that.
Right.
And I kind of stopped doing that. But I've never, like, I would never make a public apology and say like, oh, I dropped these bits because of that. No, it's just because I grew as a human, you know? So nor would I ever ask another comic to apologize for anything. Like, you either are a fan of that comic or you're not a fan of that comic. And the reality is, like, it's the audience that dictates what they're going to laugh at or not. So I don't think it's anybody's job to say you can't say that because, you know, people are laughing at it. Like, it might not be something you agree with, but, you know, you're not the one that pays that those person's bills or books them on those shows.
Your point about growing as a person, the three of us here have talked about this off air many times about how even just the three of us over the years doing shows together, we are at a different place today than we were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, when the show was much more raw and would not fly in today's society.
No.
And then I think about what I think about what you were saying, Michelle, like it seems like fat shaming is still sort of one of those gray areas when you talk about those politically correct groups that rise up. But then I see something, I guess a month or two ago, I don't know, I've lost track of time in this friggin' pandemic, but I saw this group of women that were attacking with such like bile. They were attacking Adele for losing weight.
Yes. So listen,
like, you were our leader.
I agree with you on that. And I get very frustrated with that to the point that sometimes I have to log out of Twitter because I'm on Twitter all the time. I don't have a day job. All I do is be on Twitter. That's why I should be taking pictures of my feet, but I have Twitter to keep me occupied. And I hate that. I get so frustrated when I see that because people are, it's like they want, this is the thing with fat shaming. It's not fair to like make fun of somebody for the way they look. But if that person is not happy with the way they look, then they have a right to change that or to say, hey, I was unhealthy or hey, I was unhappy. This is how I want to live my life. For people to shame them for not being where they are anymore in life is just wrong. And I've been told that I was being fat shaming before. And I was fully like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not apologizing. Like on Twitter, you know, when someone, anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't know who's going to listen to this. So I don't want to throw people under the bus.
Oh, you had a juicy story.
Yeah. No, it's just someone tweeted something that I didn't agree with. And normally I'm like, don't say anything. Don't say anything, but I was like, okay, I'm going to say something. They had said something about how like thin women call themselves fat because they're trying to be cute and trying to like be fat. And I was like, or maybe they just think of themselves that way, you know? Because I remember when I first lost a lot of weight, I would still always think of myself as fat.
Right.
Like, that's just how it is. So you don't know what that person's thinking, you know? Like, maybe it's somebody who's really thin that has like body dysmorphia or something and they think that they're heavier than they are. And so I don't think it's fair to like put those kind of things on people where you're guessing what's actually happening in their brain. And then it kind of turned into like somebody telling me I was being fat shaming or whatever. I don't know how that's fat shaming, but.
But then there's the flip side, like that woman you talk about in your album, who's the super hot model that complains about her fat ankles.
Yes.
I hate that woman. I hate her.
And I will tell you this.
I hate her.
I did an outdoor show like a month ago and she was randomly there. And I was like, oh my God, my old roommate's here. And I was like, hey, I have a joke about you. And I did it and she loved it. She thought it was great.
Right.
So she wasn't offended by it or anything like that, you know?
But and you secretly so
she had
hate
no
her.
Problem with the bit. I mean,
yeah, come on. Secretly, I mean, you hate
but,
her a little.
But think about this though for a second. Like, fat ankles aren't, they're not cool.
Right. Sure. And maybe it really bothered her. But when I lived with her, I was like, almost 200 pounds. So when I'm like, oh, I'm depressed because I can't book an acting gig or I can't do this because my weight. And she's like, I feel you. My ankles are fat. Then I'm like, come on, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
great right? comparison.
Meanwhile, yeah. She's probably 90 pounds.
Yeah. So I'm very cognizant of that too. Like when I lost weight and stuff, I used to still have jokes about being fat and how I was made fun of on stage. And then I realized that people didn't really want to hear that. Like it was almost like offensive to people who were kind of big and struggling with losing weight and stuff. So right. I had to find a different way to talk about it as opposed to kind of like I was still that person.
I want to ask you something. I know as a stand-up, you've performed all over the country. Mm-hmm. You've done really well for yourself in that way. I personally think sometimes because I go to a lot of stand-up shows, you know, when the world was normal. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing someone who just absolutely kills. But even better than that to me is when someone absolutely bombs. That's my favorite
thing. It's
pretty
fun to watch. It's pretty
the
fun to watch.
Best.
It's an awful feeling, but it's pretty fun
to watch. Bad to be.
Right.
So yeah. Let me find out what kind of woman you really are. Have you ever been backstage and seen a fellow comic completely bomb and you secretly loved it because you know you're up next?
Yeah. 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 I mean, not necessarily up next because you want the audience to be laughing when you get on stage, you know? But
yeah.
There are certain people that when they bomb, I'm a little bit happier inside and they're not my friends and they're not, but they're, you know, and I think every comic has that like few comics that you really just don't like. And when they don't do well, it's kind of like.
Have you used it?
It's not just comedy.
Sorry, did it become
like, what do you mean?
Did you get on stage after the person who bombed?
No. I have, but it wasn't at a professional show. It was like, I was headlining an amateur night. So it was like me and then a bunch of amateurs and the guy bombed so offensively. Like it was really, like, I know what you guys were saying about don't apologize for jokes, but they weren't jokes.
Right.
Like it was just like, you know, using homophobic slurs or like making fun of like beating women. And so I totally reamed him apart, you know?
Sure,
But I wouldn't do it to like.
That's what I love.
Yeah, I wouldn't do
it. I love that because I consider that's like battling in hip hop. I love to see comics battle.
Oh, I love that.
If a comic's dissing another comic, I'm like, oh, I got to check this out.
Go ahead. My friend, another comic, you guys check him out, Cedric Newman. Way back in the day when we used to like Tuesday nights at Yucks, I haven't played Yucks in a long time, but when I used to kind of be rostered with them, they Tuesday nights were the amateur nights where it was a bunch of amateurs, but sometimes pros could kind of drop in and do spots. And Cedric Newman and I would always roast each other. We'd always show up and you got to put us on. And he would like yell stuff from the back of the room. I'd slam him. He'd say, it was the best. Like,
I love that.
Really fun. Yeah.
I was going really to say, picking up on what Dan was saying about going on stage after someone bombs and then using that against them. One of my all-time favorite examples of that years and years and years ago, they had the Emmett Smith roast.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
And this is where Jeff Ross really made a mainstream name for himself outside of the Friars Club. And he came out on stage after former Dallas Cowboy Moose Johnson had done his bit talking about Emmett Smith. And he bombed. Moose Johnson's not a comedian. He's a stupid football player. And he bombed. Like, he had crickets laughing at him. And like,
let him write his own stuff.
Right. He was terrible. Yeah, so Jeff Ross goes up on stage. He murders. He does 5 minutes murdering. And then he drops. Sorry, my set's so short. I was going to do more, but Moose Johnson stole all my shit.
That's really funny. That's really funny.
I died.
But that's the thing. It's like, it was at a roast. So there's a difference between like being at a roast and being in a club and throwing one of your colleagues under the bus.
It's expected at a roast.
Exactly. But
here's the flip side of that question. Have you ever bombed so bad that you couldn't stop laughing afterwards?
No, I bombed so bad that I wanted to die. But I don't laugh at myself bombing. Are you kidding me?
You got to come around at some point and just go, fuck.
I'm sure now. Like, I'm sure if I had those sets on tape, which I don't, and I could go back and watch them, I'd be like, oh my God, like, why did I say that joke? Or why did I, you know? But every comic has bombs, and any comic who tells you they haven't is completely delusional and probably one of the ones that are always on. But we all bomb. It's all happened, and it's the worst feeling ever. So it takes a bit to be able to laugh at it. Like, when, there's definitely, you're embarrassed, and you're like, I don't want to face the audience. I have to leave right now. Yeah. You don't want to be there when the show's over.
When you bomb really badly, do you sit there and go, this crowd fucking sucks? Or do you go, my delivery was shit tonight?
There's both. There are times where the crowd does suck. There are times where that's a thing. There really is. Times where, like, they're not paying attention to anybody. They're just loudly doing their own thing. That's a crowd. But there are times when I know it's me. And you know what? Like, you can be a great comic, but some people aren't just going to gel with you. Like, that's just the reality of it. You know, like, you're never, there's always going to be some people that's like, oh, that's not for me. And, you know, the worst is when, like, it almost affects me more if everybody's laughing except for, like, one person that you just can't stop staring at. That's just sitting there.
Really? That one person?
That I'm like, yes. It's, like, almost worse because you're like, I know I'm doing a good job. Everybody else is laughing. But then it's like, what? And I've sometimes stopped and been like, okay, what do you not, like, what am I doing wrong? Like, what
have you ever done that in your show? Like, how much freestyle comes in your show? Have you ever stopped what you know is your routine and said, I'm going off the cuff here?
100%. I do that a lot. Like, I'm very kind of off the cuff, which is why this whole COVID thing sucks so bad, because you're so far away from the audience or separated by plexiglass that you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So it's really depressing. But that's kind of my thing. Like, I love talking to the audience. Some of my best bits have came just from, like, conversations while I'm on stage. So not having that freedom anymore is pretty awful.
Do you find it easier, like, for yourself, doing crowd work as opposed to, like, having to sit down and, like, meticulously try to write material and rewrite punches out of it and, like, rewrite jokes instead? Like, do you find it easier just to go out there and do crowd work for yourself?
And I don't really say, I don't think easier. It just depends on my mood. Like, sometimes I'm there, I'm like, oh, I just want to get through my set. You know, I just want to get there, get paid, stick to what I know. And you're just not in the mood to talk to people.
Really?
And other times, like, when I'm kind of transitioning, like, when I did this second album, I was so sick of the first hour that I had, like, as a headliner. I'm like, I'm so sick of all my jokes. I hate it. I wasn't happy doing them.
Wow.
So when I went on stage, I was more apt to talk to the crowd because I'm like, I don't even want to do these jokes anymore. I don't like them. They're not who I am. And it really kind of pushed me to get the new stuff going. And a lot of that came from just talking to people, and things would come into my mind. I'm like, oh, that's funny. I can expand that into a bit. So it's just mood dependent.
Yeah.
Was it a menstrual thing at the time?
Always.
Always.
Well, no, that's legit, because you made, you know what I mean? Like, because your mood might change a little bit.
It's fascinating, though, to hear it from the mindset of someone whose job is to make people laugh when you are not feeling in the mood.
It's awful. And the worst is that, like, a corporate show, when you're getting paid thousands of dollars, you can't swear, you can't go off script, they don't want you to talk to the clients. You just have to do your job, whether they're laughing or not. And it does suck. And the thing is, like, I don't want to say it's ruined comedy for me, but it's made it different. Like, my husband likes to watch, like, specials on Netflix and things like that. And I'm just like, it puts me in, like, work mode. So it's not like I can sit down and enjoy it. It makes me, like, take it apart and think of, like, oh, man, why didn't I come up with that?
Right. That's the
word. I stay away from hip-hop documentaries.
Yes.
Honest to God.
Yes.
That's the worst feeling, when you watch another comic and go, fuck, why didn't I think of that?
Exactly.
That too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or you could just be Dane Cook and do it anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. Or the worst is when you watch a bunch of unfunny comics who are getting, like, specials at American
Shows. Oh, yeah.
You're like, it's hard to not compare yourself.
Michelle, we got to wrap up. We got to wrap up. But before we go, we have a couple questions that came in from some live viewers.
Really?
Yes. One of our viewers said,
does he want to buy foot pictures?
No, two female viewers.
Okay.
One female viewer said, I'm loving Michelle Shaughnessy, but I'm blinded by the fucking boulder on her finger. Can we please have a better look?
Can you see it? Is that?
Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
That's oh my God.
That's the grassy money's good.
That's like a Kobe apology ring.
That is
what's funny is this was the second ring.
That's a
first ring.
That's That's a
I picked this one
solid, up. That is a solid zirconia if I've ever seen
it. I picked this ring out. The first one, he's listening to me. It doesn't matter. The first one, I was like, yes, but no, we're going to.
Were you there when he picked it up and paid for it?
This one I was, but he had a ring when he proposed, and I was like, yeah, but I don't want that ring. Like, it's not my style.
Wow. Okay.
But you said yes, though.
Like,
was it the ring?
Yes.
I don't want that.
He proposed the
one.
Ring that you didn't like. He gave you the whackas, and you were still like, yes?
You said,
but that's pretty
yes.
Nice.
Yeah, of course.
And said, so you took exactly. him.
It wasn't it wasn't a tentative yes.
So it's because he was funny. It's because he was Daddy. Funny, right?
Yeah. It was the intelligence that got you.
He's intelligent.
Another observation from another female viewer says, I may be wrong, but I thought I caught a glimpse. Is Michelle wearing pajama pants?
I'm wearing avocado pants. These are my pajama pants. Avocados. I know. I was like trying to like be stealth about it, but yeah, I'm wearing avocado pajama pants.
That's awesome.
I don't know how one of our viewers picked that up. I did not notice.
Well, I did not see that, but I rate the avocado.
What's funny is when I cross my legs like this, I'm like, oh, they got a glimpse of my pants. Hope nobody noticed. And someone did. So
nope.
Good eye person.
They catch everything out there.
Yeah. I just had a shower. That's why my hair is all like slicked back.
So you're fresh.
And then I'm like, why am I going to dress my body?
Freshness. I should have put that on my list. She's got to be fresh.
Oh,
my gal can't stink.
Wash your body.
Wash your body.
That's both ways. Sure. That is both ways.
Oh, for sure.
Exactly.
Everyone knows I wash my body.
Yeah, because you're on the toilet for 3 hours a day.
But when I come out, I'm fresh.
and because of his OnlyFans page.
Correct.
OnlyFan.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, it's the guy that drives the water taxi.
That's right.
Michelle, tremendous. If people want to download or pick up a copy of your new album, Botoxic, where do they do that?
Anywhere. iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, directly from the Howl and Roar website. You can, message me. I'll mail you a copy. anywhere you want to find it, download it, stream it, buy it. I don't care. I know times are tight, so I get it. But yeah, follow me online if you want. More stuff. I'm around. I don't have anything to do, so I'm just
how much
all
of
the time.
How much of the foot videos
for custom? I don't know. For you, $20.
Whoa, he'll buy.
I think right, check your DMs.
There's some avocado.
Avocado's too expensive. Calm down. That would
be okay. That's I can't afford
your
avocado videos.
Yeah. You're gonna get some day old bananas.
Phallic fruit work well. Her website, michellesfunny.com, on Twitter by the same name. We'll link it all on the godfathersofpodcasting.com. Michelle Shaughnessy, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. Let's do this again.
Bye.
There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. Michelle Shaughnessy. Check her out, michellesfunny.com. Funny lady. A lot of fun.
Yeah,
gentlemen.
Man.
We are up against the clock. Party words.
Well, since we're speaking of albums, no more singles, y'all. The album, The Day It All Changed Lockdown Remixes, is dropping everywhere September 4th. This is a double album. I've gone from 10 to 20 remixes from the album. I got so many good ones that I wanted to put them all out. So September 4th. And just like Michelle just finished saying, this is an album that you can stream anywhere. So Spotify, you name it, wherever you stream music, Apple, etc. September 4th, it's out. And I sent it to you, Donnie. So let's go out on whatever track you want. There's plenty to choose from. And thank you to everybody who continues to show me and my music support.
Spin the dial, play a song, Tid, parting words.
Yeah, it's funny that y'all should mention that because I decided to go back into my roots and I've actually gone and I'm going to reintroduce myself and the world to my musical talents. I've went out and I've started playing drums again and we've been recording. We've been hanging out and doing some kind of stuff and we're actually going to put out an album as well, Dan. But we're going to put out a 78 because that's how old I am. Or maybe an 8-track, I'm thinking.
I don't think I can't play 78. Right?
Then I guess you ain't going to have it anyways. Who are we kidding? No, I'm just kidding.
I just had visions of us opening a TikTok account with Tid playing drums and Dan rapping over it.
And your feet.
And I'll dance.
Oh, that is going to get our only fan.
I think they did that. It was called the White Stripes.
I'm going to assume that's funny.
Thanks, everybody. My name is Donnie DeSilva. That's Notorious T.I.D. and your bro, Danny O. We will see you next Tuesday.
Deuces.
I'm too single to mingle. Met on a blind date. My sister wanted to bring you. She thought you'd be the perfect match for me. Cash for me. Right now, don't want any lady to latch on me. You changing my mind. Considered us a couple. Forget the past relationships. Considered just to trust you. You were different though. And your skin had a different glow. Revealing feelings that I didn't. Showing that I didn't know I had. Used to be in and out when I want to. Being alone at home. Can't lie. At times I want you. All of your friends married. Went to their wedding. So now we look at wedding shows. Talk about wedding clothes, won't let it go. And your dream is in Mexico. Cancun, you plan June, avoid the weather, snow. Not saying never though, or forever wait another year. Then you could pick a dress and pick a date.
I'm cut out for the married life, won't take it back. No, that I'm not looking for my wife. I know you wanna be my baby.
It's how it all starts, like Nescafe, but it's a phase. The investment stage, where your character is best displayed. Hoping the future entails a fresh bouquet. But I wouldn't say yes to the dress too hastily. Unsavory situations basically placed a brace on me. Now my heart's harder than masonry with no soft center. Keeping my feelings wrapped up like it's a harsh winter. It's false pressure, feeling destined for a ceremony. I would dare be lonely than have a Ferrisex member on me. See, I'm already straight jacket fitted. For my baby girl, I'm crazy committed. My heart is no space for a visit. Unless you'll accept the stipulations in front of you. Number one, are you willing to always be number two? Secondly, if I don't want to add to my family, ask yourself, is an altar where you'd want to stand with me?
I'm cut out for the man.